Okie.
All right. Everybody else ready?
Okie dokie.
Yep.
Let's kick it.
All right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Right. Everybody ready? 1, 2, 3. Let's show rules!
Eagles! Showtime!
It's a Little Thing Tech Show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the cats, you can skid up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are looking bad. Go to show link, go to record DLSGS.org. MICchannelisalinuxx.net. Bound Tech Show. Just sit right there, cause the counter's just about to begin.
Good evening, and welcome to episode... What episode are we at? 370?
Something like it.
Yep, 370 of the Linux League Tech Show. Coming at you live Wednesday night, of course. No Link tonight, he had to work. No Pat tonight, he had to work. But we got Dave Yates.
Hello.
And we got Alan.
Yes.
And we got Joel.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got Dan the Man Fry.
How's it going? You introducing the Colonel Panic Ogcast here?
Yeah, I'm doing it like that. And extra special, I got everybody, didn't I?
Yeah, except yeah. You won't hear any beeps if we swear.
That's right. An extra special guest tonight, Stephen Lake from RealmsOfImagination.net and also Raiden.com.
Raiden.net.
Raiden.net. RAIDEN.net. Good evening there, Stephen.
How you doing?
Doing pretty good. You know what? Before we get into any of the geeky stuff, we want to talk about the books. Because I'm excited to talk to you about the books. Because I'm very much enjoying them. Or the one I read. But,
I saw your order for the other ones, so that one should be in your mailbox in the next couple of days.
I'm looking forward to it. But why don't you tell us a little bit about Realms of Imagination and the series of books that you're working on?
Well, Realms of Imagination is my writing website. That's where I present all the different series I'm working on, information on each of the books, different elements of who I am, what's going on, events, and so forth and so on. I also have a link over to a wiki I created for my Earthly universe, which currently the book you read was The Orc Perimeter, which is book one of the Earthly saga. There's going to be a total of 12 books in the series, and it tells a series of stories about a group called Earthfleet, who, you know, this might sound cliche, but it's their job to protect Earth. However, they're kind of the underdog all the way through the story, and they're having to try to protect Earth as best they can with all of these huge alien races kind of, well, I can't say fighting over them. Half of them are Earth's friend, half of them hate our guts, and we're kind of stuck in the middle. So, and we got to use our wits rather than going through and shooting everything up to try to solve our problems. So it makes for a fairly interesting storyline across the whole saga.
What I really found interesting and really caught me when I was reading the Orc Perimeter. It's the back history that, you know, it's basically touched on. The first time you touched on it, like, when you hear something like Earthfleet and you think of a storyline like this, it's almost like it takes place in the future, but it doesn't. It's like modern day, and the reason for it being modern day, it is modern day, isn't it?
Yeah, the actual book one opens in the year 2025, so it's a few years ahead of now, but it's, you know, everything on Earth is still pretty much the same.
Right, and just like the potential storylines for the back history is just so, it's very intriguing to me how that there's like two different groups of humanity here.
Right,
actually,
you have the
potentially three.
Right, you have the Brayburn Society, known mostly, or by was just the Society, who is a collective group of scientists, in a way geeks, nerds, and other people who really love and embrace science and everything. And they originally formed as a way to protect themselves from the people in our world who feared science or hated it and wanted to see it destroyed. So rather than try to go at it individually, they banded together for strength in order to continue their push for science, even though the world wanted to have absolutely nothing to do with it. So this is back, you know, they were first formed in, according to the storyline, 1897. But with some of the founding members being Galileo and a couple others, and this will be touched on more later on, but that it started from that little point there, and once they were free to do science the way they felt it should be done, then their technology and their knowledge and everything just went forward like a gunshot, just took right off. Hence, by 2025, they're now out there playing around with highly advanced starships, running around the galaxy, all this kind of stuff. So they, you know, they basically do in 10 years what would take us 100.
Yeah, I mean, I was very intrigued by that. Now, and you said that you're going to touch on some of that history in future books?
Yes, it'll be touched on a little, you know, a piece at a time in each of the next three books. Destiny's Mission, which is book 2, Homeworld, which is book 3, and Empire Rising, which is book 4, and that's coming out this November. Book 5 actually takes... Book 5 is actually a prequel. I basically stopped the series for a little bit and take a look back at where did Earthfleet originally come from? How did it get started? And you go back and you look at the very first explorers for the Society and all of the events they went through, which eventually spawned Earthfleet.
So obviously that takes, you know, a whole different set of characters and everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You'll get to meet Captain Edmund, who was the original the original captain of the very first Society starship, which eventually became the very first Earthfleet starship. And he also became the very first Grand Admiral. And you get to meet him, I'm not going to spoil the story, but you get to meet him from where he comes from. Because he comes in from outside the Society. Because the Society has a system where they, if they find somebody in the world they think is worth, you know, who is far enough ahead of everybody else that they're worth protecting and bringing in under the protective umbrella of the Society, they'll go out and they induct them into Society. And Edmund's one of those kind of people. But he's brought in because of his skill as a commander, not because he's a scientific genius. So he's kind of the oddball as far as regular inductees go. But he eventually leads up the Starship Destiny, which is the first Earthfleet starship. And you learn about everything that they go through with, you know, with that ship, their first steps out in space.
Now, with the wiki that goes along with it, I take it that the information on the wiki, it pretty much stays in conjunction with the books that have been released, so you're not looking at any spoilers on the wiki unless you haven't read a book that's been released.
Right. There are some things that are a little preemptive, but they're more like teasers. They don't go into any detail that would spoil you for the next book. Usually I won't update the wiki until after the book has been out for a period of time, give people a chance to read it, and then use the wiki as kind of a reference point. There's also a nice big message on the front that says, you walk in here and you haven't read these books up to at least this point, you know, it's spoilers galore, so beware. But yeah, there's nothing in there right now for book 4 except for some teasers and some references to the book, but that's about it, and the regular information won't go in until probably February, well, not even that, probably about the time I release book 5. By then, I figure enough people have read it, it's safe to put the information in.
One of the things that I really liked when I was reading the Oort Perimeter is... Now, I haven't read a ton of science fiction. I mean, I've read a handful. I've watched a lot of TV shows and stuff like that. I'm fairly familiar with the genre of science fiction. I really enjoyed how, in a number of incidents in the book, you would lead me down a hallway and you present some kind of like, almost not, I don't want to say cliched, but kind of you would lead me to an expectation that something was going to happen and what my expectations were for what was going to happen. And when I got to that point, it was something totally different than what I expected. And that like, you did that a bunch of times in the book, and I really enjoyed being thrown like that, because it was, you know, here it comes, here's something that's going to meet, this is what I think is going to happen, oh, this is what's going to happen, and it's completely different. And I've got to say, I really thought that was awesome.
Did you have a favorite character or a favorite scene in the book?
Favorite character, you know, I'm always horrible with characters' names, but let me make sure, because I think one of my favorite characters is Fyland. Is that how you pronounce his name, Fyland? Renwald?
Yeah.
I really like Fyland. I mean, he's an ambassador, but yet at the same time, he's got, like, extensive martial arts training from his father, and he just seems to be, like, just, I really like that character.
Yeah, he doesn't take any flat, does he?
No.
What do you think of his friend, Finch?
Finch. I liked Finch too. I liked how they worked together, and it's almost like an unlikely pair. But I like how Finch is trying to learn the human culture and everything. And you know, more I think about Finch as a character, I'm intrigued, because one of the reviews I read of the book on Amazon, it was talking about how the book was great, but then they were complaining that the is it pronounced Vassin? How would you pronounce that?
Yeah, Vassin.
The Vassin, how they're reptilian, and they were complaining that due to the facial structure of reptiles, there's no way that they can make some of the gestures or that you were talking about in the book, or some of the facial expressions. I'm like, you know, this is an alien race. It's not necessarily an evolution of Earth reptiles. It can be completely different, right? Which, you know, when I think of Finch, who's avian, very bird-like, I'm curious about his, like, vocal structure, because their language is almost impossible for other people to pronounce, and my assumption about their language was, is it close to the bird calls and stuff on Earth?
Yeah,
or?
It's very harmonic, but it's also highly contextual. So he can say the same thing and have it mean four different things. You just have to know how it's being used in the context to understand what it means. But it's a lot of chirps, clicks, whistles, things like that.
Yeah, so I was intrigued by that and how he could actually, how he would go about speaking other languages, that kind of character, to have the structures to do that.
The best way to picture Finch, and I've described him this way to a lot of people, is he is kind of a cross between an ostrich and a duck. So he has, you know, chief characteristics of each one, so that gives him the ability to be very phonetic in how he speaks. So he could, you know, he could master other languages like Standard, which is the galactic language of the universe. And he could also master English, but it takes him a little while to get the vocalizations. Once he gets that, he's fine.
What I never pictured Finch, though, and you probably had said this when you first described them, is when they're all walking together, I never pictured Finch as having wings until he banged his head in the fight off the ceiling on the... in the Senate floor, I think it was, when they were in the Galactic Senate. But
he doesn't use them too much. You know, like I said, he has elements of an ostrich, where where he is more at home on the ground walking around than he is in the air, but he can fly if he needs to.
Yeah, he's a cool character. I also like Sarah. When you started, when you started getting into, you know, like the expectation for Sarah, you know, what she halfway through the book when you learn that she's just more than an AI.
Mm-hmm.
She's pretty intriguing too.
Oh, there'll be more revealed on her through the next couple of books. That's really going to kind of open some eyes and get some people really wondering to her backstory, because there's a lot going on between her and Zone that isn't revealed in the first couple of books, but once you get past that and it really starts getting into the meaty part of what their relationship actually is.
Yeah, it was it's very interesting, and just the race, the other races, the Vasin, the what's the fish called?
The Varnok.
The Varnok, and then the bats are called the
good question. I gotta think on those.
Not
they were called Sarian.
Sarian, yes, and then there's also the Mobiek. Is that the Mobiek?
Mobiek, yeah. He's Varnok. He's the admiral of the Varnok Black Fleet.
Yes, I liked him. He was pretty cool. I liked his ruthlessness, and he wasn't like how would I say, he had redeeming qualities to him. I thought, you know, he was very well presented, and he stayed true to his character during the whole thing. But he wasn't stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed that that whole space battle. The space battles were great. I really enjoyed reading the space battles. They flowed very well.
Yeah, I thought a lot of people mentioned that, which is one of the things I was always worried of, whether or not they would come together right or not.
But I thought you did a good job with those. I mean, it's a great read. And you made the first one available as an electronic download for free.
Yeah, you still have to buy the print version, but you can get the ebook for free.
Yeah, and you know what bummed me out is, because I read a lot, and I've migrated from, like, books now to reading on my handheld devices. You don't have electronic versions of the other books, do you?
Actually, I do. I just don't have them out in distribution yet. I still got to get them out there. I'm probably going to start out with Goodreads and then work out to some of the other ones, like Smashwords and things like that. I've just been slow getting them out there.
Oh, so you're actually going to make all of them available for free?
No, I'll just the first one's free, available for free, so people can get a feel of the series, see what they think of it, and stuff like that, and then the other ones will be sold at a fairly decently low price through different distributors and stuff.
Oh, okay.
Kind of like, to give you a taste of the series, get you started, and if you like it, you know, you keep rolling from there.
Now, has that been working out pretty well? I mean, has it...
Yeah, I've had a lot of good response on the series. Different people having different viewpoints on it, and they're liking the idea. I mean, at first I didn't even think of putting them out there in ebook, because I was very much of the traditional publishing mindset. I got into like mobile read, and they were like, "Oh, you should have it out in ebook." So I started putting it out in ebook, and then I started expanding formats to allow for Kindle and others like that. So it's a learning and growing experience as I do this. Because this was the actual first couple of books I've ever had published, even though I've been writing since early 90s. The only reason I even started publishing these is, before this, I did it just for fun. And I got to a point, you know, and I would share it with friends and family and say, "Hey, what do you think of this? Do you like it? Is it a fun story?" And after a while, they just looked at me and said, "Dude, why aren't you published?" I'm like, "You think I should get published?" I'm like, yeah, surprised you aren't published yet. So I went out and got published.
Now, these are the first set of books. The Earth Fleet is the first set of books that you've had published, you said?
Yeah, Orc Perimeter was the first Orc Perimeter was the first one I published. Then I published a short story anthology called The Dreamland Articles, book one of that series. Then Destiny's Mission, book two of Dreamland Articles, and Homeworld. And I've got Empire Rising, which is book four of the Earthfleet saga, coming out November 15th, or at least that's the release date we're shooting for.
Now, have you, you have a list of a lot of books here, and stuff that, are you working on a lot of this, or is it, do you already have a lot of this written?
Well, there's a bunch of it that's written, like, for example, the, with the Earthfleet saga, I've actually got, First Dawn and Titan Sun written. I'm just working on cleaning up the drafts and getting them ready for eventual publishing. So those are works in progress. Specimen's written, but needs a little work on it. Rathul's partially written, needs to be cleaned up and finished. The rest of them are all kind of, with the given exception of the first two Dreamland Articles books there, the rest of them are all either in concept stage or early draft. So, and everything that I have listed here is basically what I plan to release over the next 5 years in one form or another, with the exception of the Imperial Colony saga, and that was put up there just to get feedback and input from the readers before I decided to go forward with it, which currently I am going to go ahead and go forward with. So that one will probably get added into the list of things going out. But in total, I've got roughly 35 different novels in various states of completion right now. Everything from fully completed to concept and rough draft stage.
That's cool. The Dark Year Chronicles, now, is that going to be somewhere where you're going to delve into a lot of the history behind the Earthfleet
universe? Yeah, it's a lot of side stories. Yeah, it's a lot of side stories, stuff that isn't and, you know, it's not a large enough story to tell in a book of its own, but it is an important item to fill in little things that are mentioned or touched on in the book. I don't go into any detail on. Like, for example, in... I'm sure I got a list of all of everything I've got in. There it is. Yeah, I have his, like, back history on Philip, some of what he does, then there's, like, information on the War of the Nine, some more stuff in the early history of the fleet, things from some of the individual characters, like Toby, some of his early history, more on Sarah and other things like that. So, including one story that tells how Earthfleet and the Society became good friends with the Gafando Na, which Finch is a Gafando Na, and it tells how they originally became friends, which then explains where why Phylon and Finch are such good friends. I even have a story that kind of covers Phylon and Finch's early history, and it goes from when they're kids all the way up to just before they meet, and you get to kind of see what led up to them eventually, you know, meeting and becoming friends.
You know what? It just crossed my mind, and I wanted to mention this. Something that really bugged me about the stories. And it's really petty, but as I was reading these stories, and I'm looking at the technology they have, the one only thing that bothered me through the whole book was these data tablets, the data pads.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking to myself, here's this advanced civilization, this group of people there, so sophisticated, and they carry around all these. They have stacks of data tablets. And I'm like, why can't they just get it wirelessly, the information, instead of having to switch between data tablets?
Well, that isn't explained completely in the book, but a lot of what it is nobody has their own personal data tablet. Some of the tablets Well, each of the tablets have access to a wireless library, but some of them are... It's like having individual stacks of paper. Each one might be loaded with an individual report, and it's just their way of filing and sorting it and stuff instead of having one tablet that has everything there, you know, and if you lose it, oh no, what do I do? Or some of the, like with Nordam, like the different directors, they would submit a report, put it on the data tablet, and hand it in that way, not because they couldn't send it over the network, but they just did it as a security thing. So some of that is security related, some of it is just they like to farm it out on the individual tablets just to keep it straight, kind of their little impromptu filing system.
Fair enough.
Think of it like a fallback to the old filing systems, but they're doing it with tablets.
Okay. But it's
it bothered me about Next Generation. They did the same thing on that one.
What?
You ever notice that? In Star Trek The Next Generation, there's at least one or two scenes where they had a character that bobbled a whole handful full of pads.
Yeah.
Can't remember which episode, but... Oh.
Well, Joel, you should go download and read this book at the very least. I know you
first one.
You sent us some to give away at the Ohio Linux Fest, and that was great. We really appreciated that.
Well, I hope the people who got them enjoyed them, because I'd be interested to hear their feedback too. Because that's of everything that you know that I do when I'm writing. The one thing I love hearing is that people enjoyed the book, and just to hear some of their feedback, their insights. What did they think of the story, the characters, and stuff? That, to me, is the best part of writing, is that you enjoyed it, and that, you know, it was a fun experience.
Now, due to your website and everything in the wiki, have you gotten a lot of feedback from people? I mean, have you found that having the website and the wiki and everything has made it easy for people to give you feedback?
Yeah, I even have a little feedback form that people can fill out and submit to me anonymously if, you know, because I know there's a lot of people that are all worried, oh no, he gets my email address, he's going to spam me with all this stuff. So I have an anonymous feedback form, which, again, keeps spammers from spamming me, and allows people to, you know, either send me a comment with their email address so we can interact directly, or they can just submit something anonymously and say, hey, love this, thought it was great about the character, so on and so forth. So they can do that right off my website if they want.
So, Stephen, aside from the books, or have you been approached by any other, like, television or movies or anybody interested in making these novels into a series or a movie?
Not yet, although that is one thing I would like eventually, is to have somebody come up and consider the books for something like that. Because they are written in a way that would make them pretty easy to convert to a screenplay.
That'd be very, very awesome. Very interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd actually like to see them as a television series, because there's so much depth to each book. You'd almost have to make each one of them a complete season.
That is true. That is. And it's such a nice, it's such an interesting universe that it could go beyond the books on top of it too.
Mm-hmm.
A comic book, there you go. Graphic novel.
Who Lacutus is of IT Toolbox?
The who?
Lacutus. He's a writer for IT Toolbox.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He actually put up a blog post one time about book one. And when he was doing the review, he compared the writing style to a cross between Asimov and E. Smith. Not as in, you know, that's their style, but rather just the way it was written. But because Asimov was a world builder, but Smith was a space opera person. And Lacutus was basically saying my book is kind of a combination of two. It's both a space opera and a space opera with a large world. But in book one through four, I only dive into a handful of the nine races. I mean, but it's going to take me all the way up to book seven before I get everybody covered. So that's, you know, considering the size of the world and everything.
Well, I will read the first one. I just downloaded it. And I'm thinking along the lines here. We talked about like the content of the books, which is pretty interesting. But one thing I'm kind of interested in is, what kind of tools do you use to actually create the books? Do you use Linux to do that?
Yeah, I use OpenOffice on Linux. I run entirely Linux. Linux Mint, actually. But yeah,
Do you use, I'm sorry. Do you use Calibre to create the MOBI and the EPUB files?
The EPUB I actually built by hand. I'm a little too nerdy to actually let Calibre do the construction, so I actually build those by hand through just a couple of scripts I have to convert because I'll export as a text file and then let a couple of scripts handle the rest of the conversion for me. But then I use Calibre to actually convert it from EPUB to MOBI and go from there.
That's pretty cool.
Now,
so
you
don't like...
Oh, sorry, go ahead, Joel.
Go ahead, Dan. No, I was going to say, so you don't use anything weird like, I know like in the past authors would have used something like Tex or something like that, some really old stuff. So, OpenOffice, or actually LibreOffice now.
Well, I still have OpenOffice 3 that I'm using for all of my writing, because that's where all my stuff is currently in OpenDocument, which is actually
cool.
A lot nicer to work with than any kind of Microsoft format ever was. When I first started writing, I was doing, I started writing using a typewriter. Then when I got a computer, I was using a simple text editor called ProWrite. And then I moved up to Office, and then when I found Linux, I just moved over to OpenOffice and been there since.
Nice.
Now, over on Raiden's Realm, Raiden.net, what is that? Mm-hmm. What is that just your aggregation site? I mean, it's more than just an aggregation, but what is...
No, Raiden's Realm was a site I started about, it's going on 4 years ago now, that I started the site originally, and it was designed as a Linux site to help newbies get into Linux. Basically, we started out with people who were at the ground level, never worked with Linux, or hadn't explored it or anything like that, and we would teach them what distributions to use, how to do commands, just basically instruct them, get them in the door, and then hand them off to other sites after that to take them up to the intermediate and expert levels like that. And then around February of this year, I started off the site Burfoot, new owner, he's taking forward there, moving it up into a new, the next level of wherever he's going with it. But they're changing the focus a little bit. It's still going to be very newbie focused, but they're going to be doing things that are more relevant to what's going on today, like more into the mobile devices, dealing with some of the other areas that. Like, they're going to be going back heavy into distribution. I did that for a while, and then we moved on to something else. They're going back to distribution and focusing on those. And I'm just acting as chief editor now to help them along with that, to try to get it, keep it going and keep it on its mission to, help new people get into Linux. Because unless you get new people in, all you have is existing crowd, and Linux can't grow if you don't increase the numbers of people using it. So that was the primary purpose of Raiden's Realm.
Now, you're a system administrator by trade, yes?
Actually, I'm a writer by trade now, but I was systems admin before this, yes. I still do cloud programming now on the side, just to help out different people and other PHP coding like that. So I still keep in, still keep up with my systems admin stuff. I just don't do it full time as a job.
Do you miss it?
Yeah. But, you know, there's enough there from people I help through the realm and through other people I know to keep me pretty busy, even though I'm not doing it as a normal 9-to-5 job. So I still get little, you know, little tastes here.
So then do you work, I mean, do you use exclusively Linux and BSD, or do you also use Apple and Microsoft?
No, I use exclusively Linux. I do have BSD stuff I play with here and there, and for a while I was pretty heavily into FreeBSD, but now it's all Linux.
So what's your distribution of choice there?
I work with Linux Mint, the KDE version. That one for me just is the one that works best.
See, if Link was here, he'd give you a big hug and a kiss.
He would.
He's a big proponent of Linux Mint.
Yeah,
have you used the Debian version yet?
Yeah, I did Debian a bit, and I did Ubuntu. I took that for a spin. I did PC Linux OS. Gentoo, a couple others like that, but ended up settling on Linux Mint.
Now, all I'm saying is Linux Mint is switching from Ubuntu base to a Debian base, and I was wondering if you tried the new Linux Mint based on Debian. That's all right.
Oh! I'm sorry, I misunderstood you there. No, I haven't tried the new one yet. I'm still on the one that's Ubuntu based, but I'm interested in trying the new Debian.
Yeah. I don't think they're actually switching, are they, Joel? I think they're just adding another release.
I think you're right, Dave. Yeah. Yeah, I think they're kind of trying to maybe satisfy those who aren't too happy with Canonical, maybe.
It's actually been out there for quite some time. It was dormant for a little while, but they kind of brought it back.
Yeah.
I think this is the first official sanctioned release of Mint on Debian.
Right.
Well, it's like LibreOffice. You got to keep, you know, you got to keep each little segment of the Linux world happy.
Yeah. Well, you got to try, which you're gonna fail if you just don't try to keep everybody happy. Do what you. I think you should just do what you're. What makes you happy, kind of, you know? You gotta be a little sensitive, but there's a ridiculous amount of people in the Linux area who have different opinions, so it's like you just cannot keep everyone happy. There's no way. Somebody's gonna do something to tick somebody off.
That's why we have so many distributions out there, is everyone's gotta have, you know, everyone's
exactly.
Gotta have their own specific need.
Like them Gentoo racers.
But we all know there's one distribution for everybody, and that's called Arch.
Slack.
Arch Slack. The gallery images on your website there are pretty... I really like them. They're pretty cool.
Oh, the image gallery?
Yeah, is that user-contributed, or did you do a lot of these, or...
Well, I did a bunch, but then there's a bunch that are user-contributed as well. I can't remember what percentage of it is, but there's actually a way that you can submit images to the archive and that, and we'll just go in and review them, and, you know, and then submit, and if it's, as long as they're not, like, porn or something naughty, we'll go ahead and add them to the archive.
That's some nice stuff. I really like that waterfall picture from Croatia. That looks beautiful.
Oh, and there's tons of wallpapers in there. Linux wallpapers, Firefox, general sci-fi, things like that. So it's all categorized, nicely organized and everything. It's an interesting little, tidbit. I actually wrote the entire CMS that Raiden's Realm runs on, wrote it from the bottom up, because I tried WordPress and a bunch of others, just wasn't impressed with them and didn't want to do what I wanted to do, so I said, fine, sat down. Never played with MySQL, never played with PHP before, just sat down, opened the book, said, let's go for it. Just learned it as I wrote it. Because I'd been writing Perl and Bash and other stuff before that, and then I got into PHP, and I haven't been back to Perl since.
That's some pretty nice, you did a great job.
Thanks.
Have you released that at all?
No. I didn't actually open source the code. It was always in flux, and I just never felt it reached a point where I would be ready to open source it. And by the time I got around to that point, everything got handed off to Burfoot. So now Tom Bean's taking care of that. So eventually he might, once he gets done putting his little tweaks on, he'll probably open source it.
That's some good work. How many years have you been using Linux?
What happens? I've lost count. I was back in the 2002, 2003 was when I first used it full time. Because I tinkered with it way back in the mid-90s, but I didn't go actually full time until like early 2000s.
Sweet. Now, does everybody in your house use Linux?
They don't have a choice.
There you go.
My theory is no Microsoft products in this house.
But where's the fun in that, though, huh? What do you do for the gaming?
Oh, there's plenty of stuff. We do all kinds of open source games. We were doing Alien Arena and NexWiz until they changed it over to, I don't know, what is it? Bunch of others. My mother plays Isle Riot Solitaire a lot. So.
Isle Riot, I love it.
Well, about the only gaming she does on the computer is Solitaire, so I gave her Isle Riot. She's been happy since.
There's a game that came out that it's probably been out for a little while, but oh man, I downloaded it yesterday, and now I can't find it. Darn it. I saw it on LX, or Steel Storm, Episode 1.
Oh, that I looks, heard about that. I haven't had a chance to check it out yet.
I just pulled it down to heaven and played around with it yet, but it's an indie top-down arcade shooter. I'll put the URL, it's steel-storm, steel-storm.com, and it when I looked at it, it intrigued me very much. It's like you're flying around a city, or different landscapes, one of them was a city, and you almost like hover, almost like a vertical takeoff and lift machine, but or a helicopter, you hover around and you go around buildings and stuff. It just looked really... really interesting and cool. I don't think you're on
a great neck.
Yeah, but it's close to that. But you're not. It's not like a top-down scroller, so to speak. You have more free range of movement. You can go. You're not stuck just going from top down. It's more free ranged.
Okay.
But it looks really interesting. The first episode is free, and then they're going to sell the ones after it. Kind of like your books. You get a first taste for free, and if you like them, come on back and pick them up. But it's definitely worth a look. But do you have a Myth TV box yet?
No, I actually have a standalone device. It's a Patriot Media Center, I believe is what they call it. It was one of the devices I reviewed, and I liked it enough, I ended up getting one.
What is that?
It's a little standalone media player, kind of like the Neuros was.
Okay.
But it's produced by Patriot.
Is that an embedded Linux device, too?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the only reason we reviewed it, because we don't review things unless they either run Linux or run on Linux. So that was a rule I set down in the early days, and that's the reason they reviewed it, because it's all run, but it's entire iOS is Linux.
You don't have Netflix support on that, do you?
No, that was one of the things I docked them on in the review. Is you guys don't have internet streaming TV, no Netflix or anything like that. And they said, oh, okay, we'll get that in the next version. Okay. So whenever they come out with their next iOS version, they're going to supposedly have that feature in there. I apparently was the only one who told them they have it. So then again, with the new Google TV and the Boxy Box and stuff others like that, they may be a little late party on doing that.
That's a small box there.
Hmm?
Does a lot.
The Patriot box? Yeah, it's not very big. It's probably like a size of because you can actually stick a laptop hard drive in there. There's not a lot of room for that thing to go in there.
Wonder if I could hack it to put Myth TV on it.
You probably could. It's got enough memory. It's got a decent-sized, I think it's either an Atom or a VIA processor. Pretty beefy little thing.
It would be perfect for a front end. That size box right there would be perfect for a front end.
Oh, hey, you can hack it. Put it up there as a tutorial and tell people how to do it. I bet you a lot of people would love to do that.
How much do those things run?
$99. On Amazon, it's $99.
Yep, I was going to say that. I just found that.
Actually, there's a $35 rebate on it, too, so you get it for $64.99.
All right, Dan, go buy me one.
Anybody else want while I'm buying?
Sweetness. That is awesome.
I've actually been wanting to get my hands on a Neuros Link for review, but the interesting thing is, they haven't had any review devices since the thing first came out because they can't keep up with demand. They were supposed to have
I knew it.
they were supposed to have a bunch of them here for review recently, and just when they got caught up where they could give out review units, the company that was making the hardware that they were using stopped making it, so they ended up having to completely re-engineer the Link, so now they're going to bring it out again, and people will be like, you know, because it's going to have bigger specs, and they're going to probably say, okay, yeah, the new one's out, go ahead and pre-order, you know, and then just be completely sold out for the next year.
I was going to say, they have a new one now that has a terabyte hard drive in it.
Oh, that must be their upgraded one, because we're talking about stuff like that.
Yep. Yeah, they have it has that and the NVIDIA graphics with VDPAU.
That was what the big one was. NVIDIA discontinued the chipsets they were originally using, and they had to go to the newer ones, which forced them to have to completely re-engineer the device.
Yeah. But anyway, Joe's working on it a lot. Plus, he's also working on a tablet, to use a tablet for the remote instead of a wireless keyboard. An Android tablet. So, and yeah, he's supposed to be sending me one, and Dan bought one.
I've been looking for review. Yeah, we've been looking at possibly taking some of the Android tablets here and reviewing them as well. But I don't know I'm being just a chief editor, I don't have say on whether or not we do that. I can recommend it and see what they say, and if they do
take
it, I'll
take
it
back. They have one with a 2 terabyte hard drive.
Ooh, Google Factor.
I just pasted the link in the IRC, so... But then they got the... It's got the Phantom 2. It's the Phantom version 2. So basically what he did is he took the CPU fan off and put a big 120mm fan right over the CPU on the side of the case. And you... Well, mine's on right now and I'm sitting right next to it and I can't hear it. So... Very quiet box. And in fact, I'm not even running the software that they ship on it anymore. I just upgraded. It's running Mavic right now. I just need to get TV to hook it to.
Nice.
Yep, I can't wait. I want to get a TV so bad to hook this thing into because it'd be so much fun. I want to upgrade the RAM in it too. It's only got 1 gig of RAM, but I want to put some more RAM in it so that I can run. I've got, I just like to watch, I'd like to have Netflix on it, so one way around it is you load up a virtual machine with Windows on it, so, at least for the moment, anyway. But, we'll see, maybe they'll figure out that they do need to have the Linux crowd in mind, too, but... Actually, yeah, I was going to say, Jesse James mentioned a Google ARM chip in the IRC, but what I'm kind of interested in with this stuff is, Logitech just released their Google TV stuff. I think it's the Logitech Review, which kind of looks interesting.
Like what, $100? $299, something like that? $250?
I actually have to Google that. I haven't looked at the price.
I think it's pretty expensive.
But I think you're right. Yeah.
The Google box?
Yeah,
$299.
Is it $299?
Yeah, I just got an email for pre-orders for it for the Logitech Review.
Right. And then the Boxy box is coming, too. Which to me looks a little bit better.
That's like the price of a PS3, isn't it? I mean, what will it do
Just pay the extra $200 and get a NeuroSlink and be done with it. It'll do almost... The only thing the NeuroSlink won't do is Netflix. Big deal.
Yeah, they actually put out a bounty to have somebody code an app that would allow Netflix. And I don't know if that's fulfilled or not, but it's out there.
The only thing they have with that is they figured out a workaround with PlayOn. You have to have a Windows machine and run PlayOn and then stream it from the Windows machine to the link. That works, but no one's have officially got it working on Linux yet. So.
This PlayOn is the biggest racket I have ever heard of.
It is.
Okay.
It is.
The licensing behind this is absurd. If you just want to code a client that is a PlayOn client, you need to pay an annual like $15,000 fee. Okay? And if you actually want to put this on a server of some type, it's like $35,000 a year. This is absurd. You know, I don't know who in the right mind would even want to buy into some type of a license like this. It just really baffles me. It's the main reason that, you know, there is no support behind Linux. This is what I feel. No one is going to, in the right mind, going to put out that server, you know, the money for that server license. Think of like MythTV or something like that. You know, they're not going to put out $35,000 just to have Netflix, you know, be capable on something like that. Likewise, even if you're just talking a client, like a front-end client or something like that, one of these little, you know, low-powered ion boxes, something like that, they can just sit there and just do, like, XBMC or Boxy or whatever, no one's going to pay $15,000 to put the client right on there. That's just absurd.
Wait, what are you talking about?
It's Microsoft PlayOn, right? It's not Microsoft?
I don't think it is.
No, well, it's how a lot of like Netflix is distributed on these other platforms, and the licensing to be able to you know, use the API and use the stuff to actually make a code for it. So a server that distributes it or a client that reads it, it's absurd to be able to have to pay that type of money just for this.
Where did you get the pricing information from?
I heard it on another podcast. They were talking about it.
Is that it, the PlayOn.tv?
Yeah.
Joel?
Yeah.
That's a Windows application.
I know. You have to have a Windows machine to run it on first, then you can stream from the Windows machine to anything else.
Oh.
It's kind of dopey.
They have something for the Wii.
Yeah, well.
But you still need to have the PC running.
Oh.
Right. And a Windows license and all that jazz.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Looks like no Netflix for you, Dan. The man, Fry.
Damn it. I've been really enjoying Netflix streaming lately and whatnot, so.
So you got a Wii, right? Or
I have a Wii and a 360.
Evil.
Dan hates freedom.
I like to kill things every now and then.
Yeah. We should probably do our intermission. We should probably do our intermission to make Link happy. Steve, I don't know how long you want to hang out. You're more than welcome to stick around. We're just going to take a short break, play some music, and then come back. But if you have to go or anything, that's fine too, and just give you an opportunity if you have to, if there's anything else you wanted to add.
Well, unless you have anything else to ask, doesn't bother me any. I could stick around and answer more questions if you need.
Sure, if you want to stick around, we might go on some other topics too. You're more than welcome to stick around. But I encourage all our listeners to check out realmsofimagination.net for the Earthfleet Saga. You know, if you're not going to buy the first book, right, you don't want to make the jump, just download it and give it a read. It's really good. Really good stuff, and I look forward to more.
And if people like it, even though they download free, if they like it, they can always just leave a tip as a way of saying thanks, I love the book.
That's right. You cheap bastards out there. So many people with their hands out, just taking and taking and no giving.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Joel? How dare you? But we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in about 5 minutes. I can't tell how long this song is. This is a song by Josh Woodward off the Dirty Wings album called Sticky Bee, recommended by Joel. So I don't know how good this is going to be. And you give it 2 thumbs up there, Joel? Okay, you just type away then. So here it is, Sticky Bee.
The safety in the numbers of this godforsaken town. It's been a week since all of this went down. In this abandoned factory, there's no one here but you and me. God help any fool who comes around. And now we both have blood upon our hands.
So that was Sticky B, Joe. You happy now?
I'm here.
I guess he is happy.
It's all right.
Holy man. So what else is going on, gentlemen? What else? Dave Yates?
Yes, sir.
What's going on, man?
I ain't got nothing going on.
You ain't got nothing? I'll tell you what else isn't going on. The Southeast Linux Fest audio. What's going on here? I'm excited to hear.
You want promos already? Is that what you want?
No, no. I want the talks from last show.
I think specifically
he wants his talk, Dave.
Well, I think we're doing video first, and I don't think that I think Klaatu's got everything he needs, and I'm not going to pressure him. Klaatu's, you know, intimidating character, so.
Well, you know what,
maybe it's a group of us, you know,
if you
intimidated,
need me to,
that might work, but just me by myself, it's not going to work.
If you need to go over there and crack some heads in his van, we'll take care of that.
Down by the river.
Steve, are you still on?
Yep.
Did you make it to the Southeast Linux Fest?
No, I made it to Ohio Linux Fest, and that was about all the farther I got out this year. I haven't been able to go out too far beyond the state this year. My car has been kind of in bad shape, so.
Oh, I'll tell you what, if you get a chance to go to the Southeast Linux Fest next year, coming up in, what is it, June 12th again?
June 10th, 11th, as well.
June 10th, it is awesome. Fantastic, fantastic conference.
And it will be no better off of next year.
Yeah, it's good. Now, you live in Michigan, right, Steven?
Yeah.
So, I know
that...
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I live in Marshall, Michigan. We're at the crossroads between 69 and 94, so it doesn't matter if you're going across the state or up north, you're still going to pass by us.
So, are you know... Just so your heads up, they're doing the Indiana Linux Fest this year.
Yeah, I heard about that. I've been considering that, and it just depends on if I have a schedule opening on that time to be able to go down, because I don't know if I have events during that period or not.
Yeah.
So you're near Grand Rapids, or Western Michigan? What part of Michigan?
Where I live?
Yeah, just the general vicinity. Is it Western Michigan?
Yeah, it's Western Michigan. It's down near the Indiana-Ohio border, about 30 miles north of that. Like I said, it's where Highway 69 and 94 come together.
I used to work for a company that was based in Allegan, Michigan. That's my interesting Michigan story for the night.
I've been...
When's the movie coming out, Dave?
Yeah. Kind of like Deliverance in Michigan, huh?
They're actually making a whole bunch of movies up here in Michigan right now. Granholm opened up a whole bunch of discounts for them to be able to do movies up here, so they're filming a couple of them. There's some stuff, I believe, from the Transformers movies being filmed up here. There was another big blockbuster, I forget the name of it, but that just finished filming over in, I believe, Kalamazoo. There's two others up in Lansing, I think two in Grand Rapids, and a couple others up north. So there's probably 20, 30 projects all filming at the same time up here.
And the last Indiana Jones movie filmed in Michigan, at Michigan, University of Michigan?
I don't know if it'll start there or not, but it would be interesting.
They started doing a lot of that over here in outside of Philadelphia. They got a big sound stage somewhere that they're doing, and a lot, like M. Night Shyamalan films all of his things here. And you mentioned the next Transformers movie, Transformers 2, a good portion of the school scene was done at a University of Penn down outside of Philadelphia, and the entire Chinese, you know,
the opening
battle, factory or whatever, that was all Bethlehem Steel. I was over there for all the helicopters flying by and stuff like that, yeah. They're doing that a lot of places now. And It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. They come in here and shoot stuff all the time. Check that show out.
They come in where? They go down in Lehigh Valley? No, in Philadelphia.
They go down to Philadelphia and shoot around there.
Well, I should hope so. It takes place in Philadelphia, doesn't it?
Yeah, but they don't actually film all, like, the inside stuff there.
No, not necessarily. It's Philadelphia, Toronto style.
Yeah. Although tomorrow night they have one on that's going to be take place when the Flyers were in the run for the Stanley Cup last year.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
They're down on the ice with the Flyers.
When are we getting another Food Geek episode there, Dan Man Fry?
Well, I can do a live one if you want me to. But
you
I,
something out for us?
I have the outline here of everything that I was going to say, but if you want, I can hold off till next week.
If you want to.
I got some keys I need to record, too.
Let me make sure that I have everything here.
Oh, my goodness.
They're playing with two neat toys here this week. The Reason Terra HD Netbook and a Sansa Fuse Plus.
Oh, you know, I look forward to hearing the reviews about both of those.
Yep.
That's pretty exciting.
Yep, the Fuse Plus is pretty nice, but it's got some niggles. I think I'll just record a review.
You know, I'm just curious, how scratch prone is the Fuse Plus compared to the Fuse?
I'll give you tell you next week.
Okay.
Because I just got it yesterday, and I didn't drop it or nothing. It looks like it might be a little bit better than the old one, but with that regard maybe. But it's a little bit bigger than the old one too. I need to find my wife's Fuse and take some comparative pictures because it definitely is bigger than hers. So. And, of course, they totally revamped the interface, but I'm not going to get into it too much right now. It's pretty good so far, but I just want to cover the basis, because there's definitely a few things that I don't really like about it. So, but I want to make sure that it really is a problem and not just me right now.
Fair enough. Fair enough. You ready to go, Man Fry?
Yeah, go, Man Fry.
Yeah.
Let's hear about that food.
What are you talking about today?
All right. So the last time I indicated that I was doing the first part in the series on smoking, and I wanted to continue that here with the next step where we're talking about charcoal grills. Last time we talked about gas grills. We set up, the smoke bombs. You know, we soaked the wood. We set up all that stuff in the last one. So this time, we want to kind of build upon that just a little bit more. First thing we want to also now take a look at is the whether or not you're going to use wood chips or wood chunks. You can go with both. You can go with one or the other. You still want to soak them. You want to soak them, I mentioned last time, in beer or wine or water, something like that. You want to soak them for a good while, hour, half an hour to an hour, something like that. The wood chunks, I would probably soak a little bit longer.
Question.
Yes.
You don't mind if I interrupt a second?
No, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Does if you soak them in beer or water, does it really impart a noticeable flavor? Not beer or water. Beer or wine, does it impart a noticeable flavor as opposed to
it'll
soaking them in water?
It'll depend upon the time that you're going to be smoking it for. So if you want to do like a pork shoulder or something like that you're gonna go for like about 8 hours, you would pick up some noticeable hints inside of the flavor of the meat then from the liquid that you're actually using.
Okay.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
No. That's good. Just don't soak them in gasoline, right?
Yes, don't soak them in gasoline. Please don't soak them in gasoline. Or lighter fluid or anything of that nature.
The kerosene.
Okay. Yeah, kerosene, go for it. So what you will need, besides a charcoal grill, is you're going to also need to have some aluminum drip pans, aluminum foil drip pans, and these you can find them, you know, usually like in the baking section of your grocery store or wherever they sell like accessories for a for grills and whatnot. We also want to talk about the fuel this time. Last time we were talking about gas. It's either going to be propane or natural gas, but now we need to actually talk about what kind of fuel we're going to use. So there's two different options right now, which is charcoal briquettes or natural lump charcoal. I prefer natural lump charcoal. They kind of take, you know, chunks of wood and they burn them to the point where they smolder and they're more or less just, you know, carbon left over at that point. You know, most of the nature of the wood is pretty much gone from them. The charcoal briquettes, they have a lot of fillers and could really put like some nasty flavors back into the meat that you're actually trying to cook. So I would stay away from that, but you would want to go with a natural lump charcoal. You can usually find that in most places now too, even like a Lowe's or a Home Depot, something like that. Starting the grill. You definitely want to pick yourself up a chimney starter. Chimney starter is a round cylinder. It's got some type of a mesh or a grating at the lower end of it. You dump all the charcoal into this thing. You want to ball up a piece of newspaper, stick that in the underside of it, light it. You're going to wait about 15 minutes. What you're going to see is basically like a jet engine taking off. It's gonna heat and glow red, you know, from the bottom up. It's gonna heat everything. Or I'm sorry, it's gonna light everything evenly, and you are going to you're gonna have a good even heat, you know, after this. It's gonna, in about 15 minutes, you're gonna start to notice the charcoal inside of there. It's gonna ash over. At that point, it's done. 15, 20 minutes, you're good to go. You then want to take this charcoal. Now, also, you also want to have gloves, some big heavy duty gloves, because you don't want to be touching this charcoal. The chimney starter without having some type of protection for your hands. Let's see. You want to take the coals inside the chimney starter and you want to dump them out. You don't want to dump them in a big pile or whatever. You actually want to put two separate piles on either side of the grill. If you're talking like a Weber grill, it's kind of like a kettle, a dome type structure. You just want to put it on either side of it, and you want to leave enough room that you can take that aluminum drip pan that I mentioned and stick that right in the middle of it. So this, it separates it out completely. The meat is not going to be cooking directly over top of the heat or anything like that. So you're talking, this is what's called the indirect grilling method. It's actually going to make it more like an oven where the heat's going to kind of surround the meat instead of actually cooking it directly, like as if you would put it under like the broiler or if you would, you know, put it right on the gas of a charcoal grill, that type of thing. Once the charcoal is in piles, you can now start adding in the soaked wood that we've had. So it's either the chips or the chunks, and the chunks are going to take a little bit longer, but what you're going to do is you're going to set these, they're going to be wet, you're going to set them right down to it. The moisture inside of there is going to keep them, is going to let those things, you know, burn a little bit longer. You may see a flare up every now and then. You can always take a pair of tongs and move them out of the way. The chips will kind of burn through pretty quickly, so you want to have a lot of this stuff on hand so that you can keep adding back to it while the meat is cooking. And if you're going to be cooking something for a long time, which is typically what you're going to use this for anyway, but you want to have this stuff, you want to have extra charcoal on hand, you want to have the extra wood chips on hand so you can replenish this stuff as needed. Now,
question for you.
Go ahead.
Have you ever smoked like this with a charcoal grill?
Yes, I have. I did it just actually at the beginning of the summer with, I think it was Mother's Day, I did a couple pork shoulders on that, using this exact method.
How many times did you have to replenish the charcoal?
Like every hour or so I would add more to it.
And how much charcoal would you actually use?
I would fill up about halfway. Well, let me say this. Let me get to the next point that I wanted to make about the temperature. after the wood is and whatnot is on the coals, it's gonna eventually start smoking. You're gonna see smoke coming out of it, not just heat rising off of it. You can at that point you can add your grate back onto it. You want to put your meat back onto it, and then you want to make sure that the temperature stays at about 210 to 250 degrees. This is gonna be the ideal temperature for smoking, you know, large cuts of meat at a long period of time. It's gonna make it tender. Still going to make it juicy. It's going to make it fall apart. You know, it's going to be everything that you want. Plus, the smoke is going to permeate the meat, and as you rip into it, you'll see like a little ring around the meat itself, and that's going to be called the smoke ring. And if you get a nice little pinkish color on the outside of the meat, in about maybe a half to a quarter of an inch, something like that, you're going to know that your smoking is actually penetrating the meat and flavoring the meat. Now, back to your question, Dan. The temperature is the key here. If you start cooking it at a higher temperature, you're going to end up overcooking the meat, and it's going to end up being drier. It's not going to, it's going to almost sear on the outside to the point where that smoke isn't going to be able to permeate it. So you want to keep it at a lower temperature. So now you want to add back charcoal in. So you always want to have some type of like a thermometer, you know, inside the grill itself, or say down through like one of the vent holes on the top. You can just get like a meat thermometer or a replacement grill thermometer and just stick it in there. But you want to add, you know, you'll want to, I mean, it's all kind of depend upon the day it is out too. If it's a colder day out, you may need to add more to keep the temperature up. If it's a warmer day out, you may only need to add a little bit so that you can keep the temperature where it needs to be. And that's pretty much, you know, I know it's a real rough guideline, but you just kind of have to watch it and see what happens, you know, throughout the whole cooking time to see if you need to add more or less. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Is that it?
Yeah, for the most part, that's it. I mean, the next time I'm going to talk about actually using a smoker, I built a smoker, so I'm going to talk about that. But for the most part, these few rules are really all that you need to kind of get started with, you know, using smoke on a charcoal grill to make some really flavorful meats.
There you go. Well, thank you, Mr. Manfry.
Hey, no problem.
Thank you. There you go. Sounds yummy.
Oh, hey, believe me, it turns out awesome. It turns out awesome when you're able to get this working and down. It takes a little practice first couple of times. But once you get it down and you got it going good, it works out really, really well.
What do you prefer, charcoal or gas?
I prefer charcoal, but sometimes out of convenience, you know, you need to use the gas.
I see what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I prefer charcoal myself.
My dad has a smoker that I bought him for Christmas, and that's what he uses. And let me tell you, man, on the way down the south, I had the pork roast that you smoked for, I don't know. I forget how long he said. It was a long time. So I think 6 to 8 hours, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And he had that pork roast, and I think he had some chickens on at the same time. Basically, he can have like two levels of food in his smoke.
Right.
And,
people go insane. You watch any of these, like, these cook-offs, like these barbecue cook-offs or anything like that, or the tailgating shows. I mean, people convert like whole like pickup trucks into just one big grill or smoker or something like that.
I was gonna say they do down in Tennessee. They have a Food City Race Night twice a year. It's always in and around the Knoxville area. For the two different NASCAR races at Bristol, Tennessee. And they usually have at both nights, they have the Johnsonville Brat charcoal grill. Is as long as it's as long as a tractor trailer.
Yeah.
It is huge. It is insane. But then they give everybody free brats. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. That's a good night, because you can go and get all kinds of samples and
like a man, like they had like a Ralph's mayonnaise, which is a mayonnaise that you can get in the South, and they basically made things with their mayonnaise, like coleslaw and stuff like that. But then
there's
they had like the
only
energy drinks
South,
and subs. What, Ralph?
No, Duke's.
Or Duke's. I'm sorry, Duke's. It was Duke's. I messed up.
Was it really Duke's?
Yeah, it was Duke's. Yep.
I used to be the quality control manager at the Duke's mayonnaise plant. My first job out of college.
That's interesting.
Barely.
Quality control. Yeah, I was going to say barely. But really, there's barely. Nothing much to mayonnaise.
It's
what eggs and...
Eggs and oil, for the most part.
Eggs, oil, and vinegar.
Right.
Eggs, oil, and vinegar, yeah.
Yep. Pretty much
and
it.
Dave's special sauce. Seasoning choices.
I knew you were going to say that. Do you go to NASCAR races, Joel?
I don't. I've never been, but this is just a race night they did in Knoxville. And I happened to be there the night it happened. And we walk out there, we have these big bags full of samples and, you know, like, bags of potato chips and subs and, you know, and they're not good subs, they're like gas station subs, but you know what I mean. So, just all kinds of crap. That man had a whole bag full of Amp Energy drink after leaving the one, and he don't even drink it. Ugh. But that's an interesting night down there, anyway. I tell you, I cannot wait till South. So I want to get more of that barbecue.
We go back to that barbecue place, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mayonnaise.
That, too. I actually get that at Mom's. But...
I get that right out of my fridge right now.
I was going to say... You're far enough south.
Yeah, we got Duke's down here. That's the mayonnaise we buy, Dave Yates. And now I'm going to buy it knowing that that Duke's has a little bit of you inside it.
Yep. Anyway, a little quick breaking news from the Linux world. Pythos has been blocked by Pandora.
What's Pythos?
Well,
didn't see that one coming, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. Of course you did. Pythos is a Python-based client for Pandora. Basically, it's a very simple program. Lets you manage your playlists and all that stuff. But basically, what happened is Pandora changed their encryption keys and essentially blocked out Pythos in favor of their own Flash-based app.
Pythos blocked ads too, didn't it?
Yeah, actually, it did not play any of the ads. So, it would, you know, I would be totally in favor of the developer. Kevin Michal is the developer on that. I would be totally in favor of him just leaving the ads in if Pandora would just, like, leave him alone. You know? Because I don't think he's doing anything bad. I think... Pythos basically allows my netbook to run to play music from Pandora without it sounding like a jet engine, because basically
Joel.
Pandora and Flash runs like crap. So
Joel.
Yeah.
Joel, hold on 1 second. Steven, are you still on? Oh, he left. I wanted to say goodnight to him. That was a great guest.
Okay.
Anyway, continue on.
Anyway, so. And basically, the problem isn't Pythos itself, it's the library it uses, which is libpiano, which is the same library that Piano Bar uses. And the developers on both libpiano and Pythos are working towards trying to get it working again with the Pandora. So
essentially what we're saying
here
is...
The also has something to do with the fact that they blocked the ad, too.
Yeah. I bet you that's probably what Pandora is most concerned about. But they'll get it. I think they'll get it. It's a worthwhile enough program. Even even if they had to play the ads, I would not mind.
What kind of ads were they? Were they just like audio ads?
Yeah. Well,
like a commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they weren't
there'd
really
be a commercial.
10-15 second ones, too. They weren't really long.
No. And if you're doing it in the Flash player, it actually like will change, like you'll have all kinds of graphics come on for that particular ad that's playing, you know, like if it's a, well, for lack of better examples, Duke's Mayonnaise, you know, if they advertise on there, you know. I've seen strange stuff on there. Nothing bad, you know, nothing like not fit, you know, work safe, you know, but things you wouldn't think of. So, cars. Stuff like that. But the thing I don't get is, though, if you use the Pandora client on Android, it doesn't play the ads either.
Yes, it does.
It does? Okay,
yeah,
I haven't used it enough
times.
Yet. Yeah, I haven't used
it
enough.
A couple times. Not too often, though. But it never plays,
yeah,
even,
it's not
even
as often
on the
anymore.
Regular one. It doesn't play ads very often.
No.
It will show
like
up
I
on
said,
the bottom.
I, right.
In the Android one, it does show up on the bottom, so you know, you'll see it across the bottom of the screen.
Right. But I wouldn't care if they played the ad. It wouldn't bother me none. I just want to be able to use Pandora and have my, you know, browser be free, you know? Not
hey,
clogged
that, man?
Up.
10 o'clock.
Flash. It is 10 o'clock.
All right.
Tick tock.
Do we have a guest next week? I don't think we do.
Let me look.
I need to email Jeff Porter yet. Yes, we do actually. Chris. Wade.
Yes, Chris Wade from
Think Penguin Computers. So.
And with that.
I'm going to need a back massage.
Well, good thing you live with a certified massage.
I was going to say,
massage therapist.
Got like a personal one there, dude.
Massage therapist.
Come on.
No, you know what? She will cut your ass off if you keep talking like that.
I'm sure she would. All right, I'm sure Dan gets the special service.
No, he doesn't. Actually, he doesn't get much massage.
Happy ending. Happy ending.
Not appropriate.
Happy ending.
You want happy ending?
Just for that, I'm going to play us out.
I was going to say, play us out, man. We've deteriorated.
I got a little music for you, too, on the way out. We're having a good time. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thanks for Stephen Lane for coming on. Thank you, Man Fry, for your food geek.
Hey, no problem.
Mr. Man Fry.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yep, thank you. Thank you, Dave Yates. Dave.
Yeah.
anything you want to say? I see your Android battery held out there.
Yeah. No, Dan, I don't have anything to say.
I appreciate all you do, Dave. Yeah. I do, very much so.
Well, we appreciate you, Dan. Everybody does.
Somebody's got to send him like a G1. At least, you know.
I got one. He can have it.
Send it to Dave so he can be one of us.
Not on Verizon, though.
Nope. Nah.
I'll get one day. Let's quit talking about it.
All right.
Droid Pro, man.
Did you see the R2-D2 droid that came out today?
Yes, I did. It's the same thing I got.
I wanted to cry.
Did you want one?
Aww. Yes.
He's crying. He's like, yes, I want one. I want an Android so bad.
How much do those run? The R2-D2
Android. The same, $199. Oh. It's the same price.
They put out a whole Empire based app for it, and it's, you can buy it. It's only on Verizon's network, but I don't know what they're doing, what new content they're going to be bringing out for Empire Strikes Back, but I don't. It's something that they're doing new for Verizon.
Oh, you know what? Apparently they're releasing
Empire.
They're re-releasing the Star Wars saga in 3D.
Yeah, in 3D.
This is stupid.
Yeah.
That is, they should just go straight to Blu-ray and get 3D.
Yes. Lucas needs another mansion, that's can. Why.
Alright.
Play the damn music. Play the music.
Happy day.
Later, everyone.
Oh, happy day.
Everybody.
Good night.
Can we talk about the new search of computers?
Can we talk about multiprocessing?
Can we talk about Beowulf clusters?
Can we talk about Web 2.0?
Just talk geek to me.
Just talk geek to me.
Hey, it's CP. Please come check out my podcast for my take on all things geeky. You can find us at www.talkgeektome.us. That's www.talkgeektome.us. Thank you.
Just talk geek to me.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
It's over, baby. It's over. Who's over there scratching something?
That's me, Dan.
Dave's scratching his ass. You there, cracking farts.
Ugh. I never heard of this application before.
What that application?
Xenon?
Spell it?
C-E-N-O-N. I wonder if it's the Arch.
The Arch?
Xenon.info is the way. It's a graphic application. I don't recall ever hearing about this before.
I found one called Astra. Do you ever heard of that? It's a Astra is a front end for Mencoder.
I think
something. In fact, let me do that. I need to actually do some conversion. I was looking for something to convert video to watch on the Fuse Plus. So anyway,
we finally got RHEL running on our AS400 today.
Nice.
Very RHEL? Happy with this. Yeah. Although,
that's not a challenge. That's a Power Series box.
Well, they couldn't get it working, and then time got away from
really?
Us, and yeah, bad media was a part of it, and you know,
yeah,
the guy I work with, he doesn't know Linux, he doesn't do anything with Linux. He's like, all right, I got it running, now what do I do? So, so we were down there trying to get it, trying to get everything.
You put your RHN keys in there and go to town.
Okay, well let me ask you that.
Yeah,
how. He went through the whole RHN underscore register process, and we
right.
still can't get any updates to come through. Proxies all
really?
In place, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it keeps saying that the repo where it's trying to download everything from, it's like there's something conflicting with the metadata coming back that keys aren't right or something like that.
Huh. It sounds like. Sounds like something's messed up with the registration.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I just updated a box last week on running our 570, so we're looking at. We're actually going to do a cluster, I think, possibly. We want to switch kind of away from power, because power is kind of pricey. But
yeah,
well. I don't want to switch away from it. Management does. And I thought, well, okay, that's fine. You know, we'll, you know, to get too further away from it, like to move our app server, that would in our database server would probably require quite a project. I'm thinking, because there is the Endian difference between the two, and the Unidata software is that's in the back end kind of sucks. So
right.
You'd have to do some data conversion on that, but it shouldn't be too difficult, and I'd personally rather go to Red Hat anyway, but mostly because updating AIX is just a pain in the butt.
But I am so fed up.
Yum up.
I'm so fed up with IBM, with WebSphere, with all this shit, because there's stuff, running WebSphere on the I is just a pain in the ass. Nothing seems to be right. DB2400 is a pain in the ass. And all the stuff that I can just do standard on in any other OS, you know, in any other app server, in any other database, I always got to fuck around with it to get it working on the eye.
Love you. Wife's going to go drop off some work. There we go. Oh, but yeah, I don't know.
WebSphere, I'm ready to throw out the damn window.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of WebSphere. We don't use it, but we use Tomcat more than anything.
I tell them I don't need it because we're not doing Enterprise Java Beans or anything like that. You know, the stuff that we do.
Yeah, couldn't you?
Yes, and I keep telling them that. I keep telling them that, and SpringSource has their own version of Tomcat that they support at an enterprise level. They have like high concurrency, you know, data pools and stuff like that that you can do.
Or you can even do JBoss too.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's a hell of a lot cheaper than WebSphere is. I mean, basically they say however many cores they can put on a machine, they'll give you a license that feeds up to that many cores, and you can run any number of virtual instances you want. You don't need extra licenses or anything like that. They just say, go for it. You know, and I do everything based on the Spring framework anyway, so. It's just a pain in the ass. Now they're telling me the features that WebSphere 7 supports aren't going to be supported on the eye until WebSphere 8, which isn't due out till sometime late next year. And that does not fit my time frame.
They love you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I better pack this sucker up. Joel, you want to say goodnight? All right. Dan, you want to say goodnight?
Yeah, hey, I will talk to you later.
All right. That's the end of the show. Zing. 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing. 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 All right, go ahead.
How do I sound? Testing 1, 2. Line status established.
You sound fine.
Very good.
We're having a good night. What time is it? Ooh, getting low on time. Better fire away.
Hey guys.
How you doing?
Hey, how are you?
It's Manfry.
That's right.
The Manfry.
I wanted to get another food geek out for you here tonight, but got caught up in the Phillies game.
I don't want excuses, I want results.
They win or lose.
Oh, they won. Roy Halladay threw a no-hitter.
That's cool.
First game of the playoffs.
I know my
one. He had one guy.
Earlier.
He walked one guy. He would have had a perfect game, and he threw one earlier this year.
That's good.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
Can you turn yourself down a hair?
Turn myself down. Let's see here.
You're ruining the show.
Better?
Wait, say something.
Test, check, check, 1, 2, 1, 2.
That's better. Talk like that, we're fine.
All right.
All right. Streams are up.
All can hear us.
Everybody happy? Minimize that. Dave Yates is
in. Oh, good. That doesn't
channel.
Come through.
What else do I need? Oh, I know what I need to do. Zoiper's running. And it's...
You're echoing.
Using the wrong audio card.
What's using the wrong audio card?
Zoiper.
Zoiper?
What?
We're trying to hear what you're saying.
Did you say Zoiper?
Hold on, I got somebody killing somebody else.
Cool.
Yeah.
Get movies, man. Get movies. They hold up in court better. Dave's calling in, but he ain't getting through. Oh, I love live mics.
Can't wait till my kids are that old. Yeah, great.
Start going after the killing field.
Yeah.
Ow. Jeez. Good evening.
Hello.
What's going on, Gorkon?
Got some cinnamon dough, or cinnamon roll dough in the bread machine.
Sounds good.
Oh my goodness.
Who got a droid?
Is that Dave Yates?
No, he's trying to call in. He said he's on the admin channel.
Well, if he had a droid, he'd be able to call in.
Droid.
Calling in, but he ain't getting through, it says.
Did you get Skype yet, Dan? On your droid?
I've had it since I got this.
Well, I know
it
you
came,
did.
It came preloaded on there.
I'm talking to the other Dan who didn't have it preloaded.
Oh.
No, I have no desire to have Skype on my phone.
Yeah,
I put it on for like a day. And decided that pretty much, since I hadn't used it ever before, really, that it was really just a waste of resources.
I just had to say, go
Phillies. You have to watch it with the Verizon phones, because there's two different ones you can get. There's the Verizon version and the actual Skype version.
It's more than that, too.
Yeah, well,
iHeartRadio is that way too now.
What's the difference between the Verizon one and the
Verizon
one? Work,
forces
one
all. Well, no, I think they both work, but the Verizon one will grab, if you're doing an outgoing phone call on, it'll grab the phone call and put it over their network.
Oh.
Yeah, because when I fired it up, it gave you all these. You know, if you're using like a U.S. call, it'll dial out through using your regular minutes. So you don't have to actually buy Skype minutes for it.
That's kind of handy.
Yeah, but I think either way, you gotta, if you're trying to do mobile-to-mobile, you've got to be on a wireless to do it. If you're trying to call another Skype person, where I think this Skype version allows you to do it either way. But then it also... the Verizon stuff you don't get grabbed by the Verizon network if you're dialing, local number or something. Yes?
Shut up.
Just put Fring on it.
Steve, are you in?
Yep, I'm in now.
All right. Now, Alan, you can talk.
Okay. Sorry.
You sound good, Steve. Wait, do you want to be called Steve or Steven?
Either one's fine. Doesn't bother me any.
Or Mr. Lake.
Mr. Lake makes me feel kind of old, but Steve will be just fine.
Alright. Let's see, we're just about ready to start here. I need to make sure all my audio is correct. Correct volumes. I don't want to blow anybody away.
So that's why Dave can't dial in. Steve's on there, right?
I thought we had two in lines.
I don't know. I never figured that out.
I would try calling in again, but I my luck. All right, you know what? I'll try it and see what happens.
Yep.
I think
yeah,
there's
Dave,
two on there.
Dave can call in because I just called in and got the channel.
Well, in IRC, Steve said he was getting the voicemail, so maybe that's what Dave was getting too.
Oh yeah, no, it was, but I had to bump it. So I fixed that, Dan. Come on.
All right.
He knows what he's doing. Sometimes. I wish I would have watched that game.
Motorola suing Apple for patent infringement.
So's Microsoft. So's everybody else.
Yep.
Yeah, it seems to be like a giant circle jerk, actually.
That's what I was going to say.
Hello.
Hey, Dave.
Hello, Dave.
Yay, Dave.
Are you calling in on your Android?
No, I'm not.
You got one? Did you get one?
Yeah, it sucks. I'm not going to use it anymore. No, I don't have one yet. It'll be April. Ask me next year.
Get a pair. Go get one.
Yeah.
What network you on, Dave?
Verizon.
I don't know that word. Yeah.
The Frugal Network.
You can get an Incredible now and get any other phone you want for free.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not according to his wife.
Yeah, that's the problem.
That's what she said.
I have to pay my card right. We don't want to get into all that.
I'd go for the X over there. Incredible.
Oh, I would too. Damn, that's loud.
They're sticking on me at work about it. Fuck y'all are.
Was that too loud for you guys?
No, it was actually sort of quiet.
It's a little thing tech show.
That's not bad.
It works for me, and that's all that matters.
Everybody ready?
Yeah, it's fine for me. I'm just every so often picking up a little bit of wavering distortion, but other than that, it's fine.
Was that you, Steve?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that wave of distortion is called Joel. And that's
kiss my ass. Kiss my ass. Haven't sounded like that in a year. At least a year.
This Josh Woodward guy, he's good?
Yeah.
Oh.
You can download everything he does, too.
How do I download something? Hey, come on. You gotta...
Hold on.
Oh, yeah, yes. How do I download something off of here?
Click
there we
on
go.
It?
Off of where?
Josh,
yeah, where are you?
Com.
Which, what do you recommend there, Joel?
Oh... I don't know. Offhand. I like, there's one called Sticky Bee, but that's not one of his newer ones.
Called what?
Sticky Bee. I think. Let me
look. Sticky Bee.
Look. Yeah.
Okay, I got Sticky Bee. This better be good.
It's actually pretty good. You'll like it. Gooster Croc.
Alright. Because I'm going out on a limb for you this week.
Oh, you just didn't have anything to play.
No, actually, I do have something to play, but this is good enough. So we're going to get started. Let me... Pig! We have a respectable guest tonight. Show some decorum.
I just consider that a sound check.
That's right.
Unfortunately, so do some other people, and that's the problem. That's why this show's going downhill again.
Right. I think it's just because Link decided not to come in. Go Phillies.
All right.
Hell yeah. Kick some ass tonight.
He sure as heck did, didn't he? Yeah, the Reds are going to go down.
He was one... He walked one person. Otherwise, he would have thrown his second perfect game this year.
I looked at scene when they saw the first ball thrown, and I thought, man, the game's over already? Wow.
Can we start the show now? You guys done? Finished?
Go for it.
It is time.
Go.
All right. And, okay, so we got Dave Yates.
Oh.
Dave, say something. I just want to check your audio.
Oh, hello. How are you, Dan?
All right. So we got Dave Yates, Alan, Dan. You know what? You should probably introduce yourselves to Steven.
Who, me?
Hi, I'm Alan. I'm the quiet one.
Yeah, that's the last time you'll hear him talk. I'm Joel.
I'm Dave. I'm
Dan.
I'm the second quiet one.
I'm the other Dan.
You're Man Fry.
Yeah, I'm Man Fry.
And Steve, I'm the one that spoke to you this week via email.
Okay.
Double N Dan.
And changed my blog posting picture.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, so we're ready to go.
For those that don't know, the reason I had just the picture is the original one that you had there was for the limited edition version, but the one that's there now is the current one that's in the public.
It's for the peons that didn't...
Out looking for,
It's for the peons who didn't get the correct one when it came out.
Well, I figured out why they did it, and I blame Amazon for that.
Yeah. All right, so, Steve, I'm going to play our intro, and then we will say hello and introduce you and get right into it.